What a song, eh? On this day in 1958, Kate Bush was born. UK singer-songwriter who had the single Wuthering Heights at the age of 19. EMI gave Kate Bush her first music deal in her teens and spent the advance on mime training and interpretive dance lessons. Money well spent. She was also the first woman to have a UK number one with a self-penned song. Her 85 album, Hounds of Love, spent 52 weeks on the charts. Bush was appointed Commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, CBE, in the 2013 New Year's Honours Music. Sorry, New Year's Honours for Services to Music. Kate Bush has duetted with Elton John, Prince. She has a legion of fans. Lily Allen attended her comeback show. And Andre 3000 once said, Kate Bush's music opened my mind up. She's so off the radar. You'd be a bit of a fan, wouldn't you, Victoria? Eating your toasty pie at the Albert Arms with your Sonny Walkman on, listening to some Kate Bush. Yeah,
you're dating me. But oh no, look, I think she's fantastic. And I can remember, like, she sort of came out when early videos were happening.
Yes.
And, you know, she always had back lighting sort of going through her lovely long curly hair.
The backlight, Nick.
Yeah, I am a fan. And,
yeah.
You know,
she's amazing, eh?
Had a crush on her. Babushka, babushka, babushka.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, man. Kate Bush, all the way.
She's a legend.
Absolutely.
Placebo version of the song is amazing, too. Apparently, her comeback show was not only it got a 5-star rating in The Guardian, it was just extraordinarily well attended and really popular. That show sold out in 5 minutes. There's something about her, Victoria, which transcends time. I don't know what it is.
Well, I find women with long curly hair always transcend time, yes.
Yeah.
I can confirm that Victoria has very long curly hair.
Right.
She was something magical.
Amazing,
she was something magical. When everyone else felt like they had been pushed out of a cookie cutter, she was something different.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of ethereal, and her voice is very unique too.
Yeah,
I think she's just very special.
Yeah. But back to the more important issues, toasted sandwiches. Albert Arms, meatloaf, chutney and cheese. Well, oh. I don't recall that one, but that sounds quite heavy. I've got a heavy feeling just talking about it. Another one here, Boo says, banana and cinnamon, also with cinnamon on the outside of the toast, as well as with the banana, with custard on the side.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, mic drop, says Sue.
Mic drop and blood pressure rises.
Yeah, indeed. It is 24 to 5, the panel, in Z National. Lovely to have your company this Friday afternoon. Nurses have rejected the latest offer with the DHB, with strikes planned for August and September now back on the table. District health boards say they have made considerable effort to meet the demands of nurses who voted no to its latest pay offer. The New Zealand Nurses Organisation, the NZNO, says its members do not believe the commitments made by the DHBs around staffing and pay will be carried out, reports RNZ. It's the fourth offer that has been made. It was just a couple of weeks ago that the nurses called off the strike, agreeing to consider the government pay offer. Now, the first strike is scheduled for the 19th of August. So I thought I might get a health commentator on to discuss this. And Ian Powell is a former executive director of the Association of Salaried Medical Specialists. He comes on the panel every now and then. He does comment on health issues on his own blog. Ian, kia ora.
Kia ora, Matt Wallace.
Yes, so look, after agreeing to look at the offer, strikes are back on the table. What do you make of this?
Well, it seems rather ironical in a way that I've just was contacted for about this program while I was at my grandson's kindergarten sandpit. and now I'm asked to comment on an industrial dispute. It's a logical follow-on in a way, I suppose. But look, I'd make two comments about this. The first is that this is really intermingled, an issue over pay and an issue over safer staffing. They are intertwined. And basically, we are losing experienced nurses because of very difficult working conditions and environments and unsafe environments. We're losing experienced nurses to Australia, and also those nurses are employable in other areas, including outside nursing. So work pressures are doing that, which makes it less attractive to and more difficult to recruit younger nurses to come through to fill the vacuum and to make up the vacancies, the shortages. So what you have to do, this dispute will not be resolved until they agree upon a level of employment conditions, particularly salaries, that enable them to retain the nurses that they should be retaining and recruit more that they need to recruit. So they're intertwined in that way. The second point I'd like to make is Andrew Little, in his day, was a very experienced union leader, and I thought he was a very good one, very practical, you know, very good head on his shoulders. But I think his comments today, when he misrepresented the position of the nurses' union, all it does serve is inflame and make it difficult to resolve the impasse, more difficult to resolve.
Okay, so just what he said, I'll just jump in. The panellists will jump in soon, but he said he wants to be very clear that this proposal was the one proposed by union. So the deal nurses have rejected is one put to them by their own union.
Well, that's false. That's wrong. It was it came from the employers. Oh. And it came from the district health boards on behalf of the government. And really, the district health boards are the meat and the sandwich to some extent. They're in effect negotiating with the government. And the proposal came from the district health board with the approval of government. And the nurses' representatives agreed to, didn't agree to it, but agreed that there was enough in it to take it back to their members to consider. But made no recommendation, and it was certainly not their proposal. If it was their proposal, it would have been different.
All right. Well, let's jump to Victoria Stewart. Are your thoughts, your question, Victoria?
I don't have a question for Ian, but I mean, my general thought is I really think the DHBs are misplaying this. I think they're coming off as arrogant and they are misjudging the fact that the public actually support the nurses. My word, if nurses feel unsafe and feel like they need more security around staffing, I fully back them to strike and to get those concessions. And the DHB is making comments about, you know, the nurses' union can't keep going on and saying, no, they've got to be realistic and compromise. Well, actually, no, they don't when it comes to their safety. They perform an invaluable role. They work hard and they should be listened to.
Ian?
Well, I agree with that, but the qualification I have to say in that is that the DHBs are the messengers on behalf are delivering the message, but it is a government message, so the ultimate accountability goes back directly to government.
What do you reckon, Nick?
Well, ironically, over the last couple of weeks, I've been into the emergency department at Wellington Hospital twice now, and seeing the front lines and seeing what those nurses put up with, honestly, it's terrifying. It's both terrifying and exhausting. And I don't know how they maintain any civility at all. And they were terrific with me and terrific with the people around them. And I'm sorry, I don't care. Just give them what they want because they earned it. And they freaking deserve it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of...
a bit angry there, sorry.
No, it's all right. That's why we get you on the panel. But there's it's no secret that there is a lot of public support. I think, Ian, everyone has a sort of a story about sort of being, as a hospital experience and being, you know, well looked after. Not all the time, but I want to bring up this latest pay offer by Minister Little saying that, look, this would put an extra $13,000 over the next year alone into the pockets of every full-time employee covered by the collective agreement. Some would say that's a good starting point, right?
But it's
Sorry,
no, Ian, you go.
Look, I have been involved. I've done more than 100 collective negotiations in my time with the Senior Doctors Union. So I've done my century. You know, I never got a century in cricket, although I got many in golf. But I know the ability of the other side to put their offer that they might make at any given time in the most generous way possible. And when you actually go through the detail, if that is a correct statement, it would only have an application for a smaller number of people rather than a larger number of people. So I doubt the claim. I doubt the veracity of the claim.
OK, sorry, Victoria, final thought.
Look, I do too. And also, it's not just about the money. It is about safe working conditions, which is vital.
OK. Ian Powell, kia ora, thank you for your time. That is Ian Howe, is a former executive director of the Association of Salaried Medical Specialists, a health commentator, sometimes panellist. Nice to have your company this afternoon. A bit of feedback around rent control. We'll have that very, very soon for you. But look, we're returning to the story we touched on earlier in the week. Research from the University of Auckland School of Psychology has found that parents who had their phone notifications on loud, those are those bings or beep or grunk that happens where you text or something like that. We're more directive towards their child. And as a result, their child's vocabulary was likely to be smaller. Well, we ran out of time earlier this week to explain things in detail. So for more about the findings, I'm joined by University of Auckland Associate Professor and Director of the Early Learning Lab, Dr. Annette Henderson. Kia ora, welcome to the program.
Kia ora, thank you very much for having me.
Let's start with that key finding, parents with audible notifications are more directive in their parenting style. What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is what our key finding told us about the study. And I guess one of the first points is what's novel about our study compared to the prior work is our audible notifications are actually asking parents about what they are doing when they're not actively on their phone. So whether or not their phones are providing audible notifications when they're with their child, but not with the phone right in front of them. So this differentiates our findings from other people's findings in prior work. And so what does this finding mean? Well, this finding suggests that parents who habitually receive those audible notifications when they're maybe eating dinner with their child or interacting with their child tend to have a more directive parenting style. And we looked at this directive parenting style in our lab session, in a research center session later on. And so basically what we do is we look at how parents talk and interact with their children. And directive parents, or a directive parenting style, is one in which parents tend to take the lead of their interactions with their children. So this usually involves making requests and suggestions that changes their child's attentional focus. And so sometimes these requests can sometimes also come out like demands and may or may not be in a harsh tone.
Oh, but so the other finding then, which was interesting, is that this tended to result in their child's vocabulary being a bit smaller.
Yes, so this is consistent with a large body of research that has shown that directive parenting styles are associated with children having lower vocabularies. And I guess the reasoning here is that when we direct our child's attention to something, we're changing their attentional focus. And so if you imagine a world in which a child is looking at lots of different kinds of things that they don't know, and they're looking at something they find interesting, but the parent kind of says, hey, look over here, this is something neat, the child may not actually be attending to what the parent is talking about. So not learning, you know, not learning from what the parent is saying and not learning about the world and the things that they're finding interesting.
The other thing, I mean, there are quite a few things and points in this study. One thing I did want to bring up, though, is also the study did find that when the TV is on in the home, it may impair parents' ability to fully engage with and ascertain children's needs. Nothing, I guess, entirely surprising in that, but that was reinforced.
Yeah, exactly. This is consistent with other research that has been conducted, and the basic idea is that when we have technologies on, whether or not it's the audible notifications or background TV, our attention is diverted, or at least it's competing between two or more resources. So if our child is trying to get our attention, but yet the background TV is on, say listening to the Olympics, and you're finding things particularly interesting, you might be missing the questions that your child is asking you. So it makes a lot of sense, and so it's nice that our findings are consistent with that prior work.
Just finally, Dr. Henderson, some might say, look, you know, my it's a busy life, my children are full on, and what's wrong with every now and then checking my phone or turning on a bit of TV? What would you say?
I think that my answer is that's true. Everything needs to, you know, you do need to check your phone and you do need to watch TV because it's important to stay in touch with the things in the world around you. But everything in moderation, and also make sure that you have that high quality time with your child where you turn your phone to silent. You're not distracted by those questions that might be coming up from a particularly stressful work day, and you're engaged and attentive to your child. And there your child will learn that you're responsive to them, and maybe they'll be a little bit more responsive to you as well.
Interesting stuff. I look forward to our listeners' responses on that. But for now, Dr. Annette Henderson from the University of Auckland and the Director of the Early Learning Lab, thanks for your time.
Great. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
How distracting do you find notifications on your phone, Nick? Do you give people your full attention or not?
I wish I could say yes, but there has to be a time when you turn it down, put it off. But it's interesting because I work in an industry where it is our job to make the shows, the movies and the games addictive.
Oh, okay.
I need to make something binge-worthy. I want someone to keep watching the show. I want them to be hanging out for the next series. I want them to be hanging out for the next movie, you know. And if it's a game, I will put alerts on the phone. I want you to pay attention because I'm going to try and get you to
bing.
To, yeah, absolutely.
So you're at fault. You're the one who does all this.
I'm a monster. I'm the monster in this story. Yeah, I'm the monster at the end of this book. But that's and if I told you that it was an industry that was specifically designed to take parents away from their kids, to distract partners from their partners, to stop people looking at the road and crash.
Goodness.
If I told you I was creating this addictive thing, I'd be in big trouble. But we laud it, you know, like people say the new addictive series or you know, you can't miss and that alert on the phone that tells me, oh, I've got to go and crush some more candy this hour, I've got to go and grab another Pokemon,
what is it about alerts, Victoria, that is kind of some people have likened it to a drug, aren't they? You know, you hit the little red button on your Facebook, or some people really get a thrill from it.
Yeah, look, to be honest, I have all of my notifications turned off on my phone. My phone's normally on silent. I just find them annoying. But I think the most entertaining thing I've found about this discussion is the notification sounds you've made, Wallace. So I was hoping you'd do a few more.
Vanessa says, I see too many parents in cafes with kids who are completely focused on their phones. Wrong. Although that's a little bit of mum and dad blaming, isn't it, Victoria? You know, people are allowed to have their solace as well.
Oh, yeah, but I do think we are, as a society, way too focused on technology. And there is no harm, particularly, I grew up at the table. It wasn't a device, but you couldn't have things at the table while you're eating. And I still believe that if you're spending time with your family at a table, whether that's at a restaurant or at home, you shouldn't have a device on it.
All right.
Yep.
9 to 5, the panel, RNZ National, Victoria Stewart and Nick Ward with me this Friday afternoon. Completely different topic here, very interesting one. We have heard quite a bit, have we not, about electric vehicles, a little bit about electric SUVs, although there's none on the market. There's a couple available models in Australia. They may well come here very soon, we understand. But what about electric trucks? Is there such a thing? Well, it turns out there is, by all accounts, according to an item by Hamish McLean in the Otago Daily Times. And Hamish says, when it comes to grunt, the diesel trucks at Blackhead Quarry's Logan Point Quarry cannot compete with their electric vehicle rival, says the quarry manager, who just so happens to be with us now, manager Joe Hunter. Welcome to the program, Joe.
G'day, yeah, thanks for having me.
Tell us about this electric truck, the first of its kind in New Zealand.
Yes. Well, that headline may be a little bit misleading. The diesel trucks certainly have their place as well, and they both go along side by side quite nicely. But basically, the idea of the electric came from probably a health and safety perspective from well back in the day, probably stemming back to my grandfather's era at the quarry, where they put a retarder on the trucks to slow them down coming off the hill so they wouldn't be using their brakes.
Oh, yes.
And then as technology's progressed, we thought, well, it's probably my father's idea now, come through and thought, why not harness that power from the generator to sort of power our uphill trip through regeneration of the batteries.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we sort of searched high and low when we were looking for a new electric vehicle. We asked all pretty much the major suppliers, because, as you say, everyone is talking about electric vehicles at the moment, and all the sort of big normal players that we sort of deal with, Volvo, Cat, Mercedes, the likes, they're all talking about it, but no one was willing to sort of sell us on the technology. So we ended up going to over to China with a guy from New Zealand.
Amazing. My question, Joe, is, but why we got you on is because a lot of people say, hey, it might be right for a little bit of a zip around town. Not so much perhaps about for utes, although it remains to be seen, but trucks, never. So my question is, can an electric truck cut it? Can an EV truck carry rocks?
Yeah, well, it works great in our aspect because so we're carting aggregates from the top of the hill to the bottom of the hill, so we can put 30 tonne on this truck. And
30 tonne?
Yes, 30 tonne.
Woo!
And so we're carting that downhill, so it's got all the extra weight of that rock in there. And so using that, when it's braking, it's not using its, say, brakes for the truck. It's that flywheel spinning backwards to slow the engine down, which is feeding the batteries back with the energy. So we're using about 5 or 6% on an uphill trip, and we're gaining that on the downhill.
Amazing. So, we've got a panelist with us, Joe. They might want to jump in and ask about electric trucks. Victoria?
Hi, Joe. Was buying an electric truck a conscious decision to do it for the environment, or what was the reason behind it?
There was a bit of that, and just basically sort of using that power to regenerate on the up and downhill. It seems like a logical thing to do, and if we're helping the environment along the way, that's great.
Nick?
Yeah, well, one of the things that stood out in the article, and I don't know whether this is true, but you guys say it $12 to power it back up after 3 days' use. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what they're sort of working off. So
$12.
$12. Now, here's my question on that one, man. Okay, so you've got an electric truck at work. Are you tempted to have an electric car in your real life, in your home life?
Well, my mum's got one, but... absolutely. But as you say, the technology for the utes and whatnot isn't quite there yet. Yeah. And so there's nothing really on the market. And it's definitely going to go that way. We just had a national conference where all the people were talking about how, you know, all the big trucks and diggers and everything is pretty much going to be going towards that electric way.
Okay, so we're talking about heavy machinery here, 30-ton haulage. So to those people who texted me in a couple of weeks ago saying it might be okay to put a bag of groceries in the back, but nothing more, clearly wrong if they can carry 30 tons of rocks. We're talking electric trucks this afternoon. Let me ask you, finally, the driving experience. What's it like? Does it make a noise?
It doesn't make too much of a noise. It makes a bit more of a noise now because we had to put some fans on it to cool the batteries down. So that's the noisy part. And yeah, you think with the fancy electric technology, it might be quite fancy in the cab, but it's sort of gone back to basics because it's a Chinese mining spec. They made a beautiful road legal truck, which we were sort of saying while we were over there, we want that cab on that truck, but we were buying one truck and they're making about 24,000 trucks a year.
So. All right. Hey, Joe. Go well. Hope everything's good at the quarry there, and thanks for joining us on the panel on RNZ.
Excellent.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me. Cheers.
Very good. So that's the quarry point manager, quarry manager at Blackhead Quarries, Logan Point. That article from the ODT. So there we go, Victoria. It can be done.
Good to hear.
I'm just going to come back and say $12 power it up for 3 days.
Bargain.
Yeah. Anne says, Countdown Nelson have an electric truck for delivering groceries to households. A couple of bits of feedback here regarding... Oh, no. Let's save a bit of space for the wonderful Kate Bush.
Oi.
Taking us out Friday afternoon. Victoria Stewart, Nick Ward, kia ora. You've been wonderful. Thanks for having with me.
I'm running up that hill.
And a big thanks to Emma Hurley for putting the show together. Kia ora, see you Monday.